Los Angeles, check our website for his book tour. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of KBOO at the Clinton, Thursday, September 21st at the Clinton Street Theater in Portland. This month, KBOO at the Clinton will be featuring the documentary, I Am the Blues. I Am the Blues highlights the last original Blues Devils, many in their 80s, still living in the Deep South. Featured musicians include Barbara Lynn, Henry Gray, and Jimmy Duck Holmes. Again, that's KBOO at the Clinton featuring I Am the Blues, Thursday, September 21st at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events. Yeah,
I'm so glad. KBOO Community Radio holds an open meeting concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be conducted at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, unless otherwise noted. The Program Advisory Committee meets the second Tuesday of each month at 6 p.m. Please call 503-231-8032 to verify if a meeting is being held.
KBOO Portland.
What would you have instead?
This is it.
A time when every second, every day, when every action, every thought will tell the world how you cast your vote.
And good morning, good morning. You are tuned to your community radio station, KBOO Portland, and it's Friday morning. That means it's time to be positively revolting. I'm Ani.
I'm Lynn.
And here we are with, this morning, we have our guest, Dan Handelman. Dan Handelman is a co-founder of Peace and Justice Works and Cop Watch, and we are here to talk about...
Not the weather.
We are not talking about the weather.
Giving you a break from the weather, people.
Other people have talked about this.
I know.
No, we are not. We are talking about other things that are, in fact, matters of life and death. We are talking about the police. We are talking about war. We are talking about the militarization of the police force. We're talking about, trying to, in fact, build a world that is better and based in ideals of peace. And so, with that, welcome Dan Handelman.
Why, thank you. So I do want to say, though, that weather can be a matter of life and death, and it is for a lot of people, so let's not trivialize that.
For sure.
And I'm reminded that after a hurricane, I think it was Hurricane Andrew in Florida, somebody described it as looking like a war zone. It's like, no, that was nature. War zones are things that human beings create. So let's be also clear about that weather is something that we, to some extent, can't control. We could maybe reverse climate change, but we can't really do anything. We can do something about human beings fighting against each other and causing destruction.
Absolutely. And that's, let's focus there. So I'm going to go ahead and start with the announcement by the administration the last week of August that basically said this administration is endorsing the militarization of police, that it's ending bans on the types of weapons the police forces in the U.S. can use against the people in the U.S., and how this was received. There's a couple of different things that immediately came into my mind as somebody who has been following police issues since, you know, the 80s, that as, you know, as somebody who has looked at the weapons they currently are using, I guess the first question in my mind was, my Lord, what, you know, they need more. There's already tanks. There's already military-grade chemical weapons. There's already guns of, you know, not really a gun expert, but I'm going to say, damn, they seem pretty adequate to kill people. Just saying that it kind of boggled my mind as to what now would be allowed that wasn't allowed previously. According to an article in the Washington Post, Trump is now allowing local law enforcement agencies to acquire from the U.S. government items such as tanks, weaponized vehicles, which, again, I just ponder for a moment, a weaponized vehicle, different than a tank then. Okay, high caliber firearms and ammunition. Again, how is that different than what they have? Grenade launchers, okay. Don't actually know that they've used grenade launchers. Bayonets and camouflage uniforms. Dan, what do you think is new there?
Nothing is new. Those were items that used to be sold to local police departments underneath President Obama and President Bush and President Clinton, who instituted the policy in 1997. Mm-hmm. So let's be clear about where this came from. It's not like a Republican idea to sell military equipment to the police. What happened was that after the protests in Ferguson, Obama banned that list of items that you just read into the record from being sold to local police departments because he felt that it was militarizing the police excessively. But he didn't ban the rest of it. I mean, there's smaller caliber rifles, all sorts of protective gear and other stuff that was still being sold underneath this program. It wasn't an outright ban of selling military equipment to local police departments. To our whatever benefit, I guess, I went to a website that tracks all the sales of these things and it localizes it to your community. And it's the only things listed in Portland are some rifles that were sold in 1999. And as you said, I'm not a weapons expert either, but they're a kind of rifle I've never heard of the Portland police using for anything. Unfortunately, what they do use are AR-15 rifles, which are the civilian equivalent of AK-47s, which are military, you know, submachine guns, basically.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you kind of hinted at this in your introduction, but even though this is horrifying and it's legitimizing the militarization of police in a way that perhaps the previous president was saying, well, maybe we should scale it back a little, the militarization of the police locally is going on with or without this program.
Mm-hmm.
That our officers have been firing weapons at people over the last couple of years, including at May Day and other protests this year, you know, flashbangs, rubber bullets, pepper balls, which explode with pepper spray in them. They wear heavy protective gear, which they're now saying, well, we need the protective gear because people are throwing stuff at us. But then they go and confiscate when protesters show up with their own protective gear as though that's a weapon of some kind, even though it's protection. So it's really kind of also accelerating this problem of officers fearing the community, which is how we end up with so many people of color who get killed by police. But also, you know, just anybody who's out protesting becoming a target of these militarized police.
And if I just to put this in a little bit fuller context, and again, I agree, this is a problem that certainly preceded Trump. But in that slide that we seem to be in at this point, of which I'm not sure there's a bottom, there, you know, this is falling after maybe just a few weeks of Trump addressing law enforcement's officers and saying that, you know, he wants them to take their gloves off. You know, you don't need to be nice and polite and or restrained in any way when you're getting a bad guy.
Yeah, he said that they should hit their heads on the car deliberately when they're putting them into a car, which is, you know, which is outrageous. The whole reason police officers put their hands over people's heads when they put them in a car is when you're handcuffed, it's very hard to maneuver your way into a car. So it's, and you know, a lot of police agencies, including ours, said, "What are you talking about, Trump? That's not appropriate way to do policing.
We're not supposed to talk about it."
Well, that, you know, I guess that could be interpreted that way, but you know, I think that there's some extent to which police understand there are limits to when they exhibit the brutality, and you know, deliberately smacking somebody's head in the police car on the way in, that's not something we hear about a lot here in Portland. And I don't
and
think
we hear about all sorts of things in here in Portland.
We do. Yes. We do. So but yeah, no, I mean, it's horrifying that he's sending these signals. And I would say that we always hear about dog whistle politics where mm-hmm. people say, oh, well, you know, the secret underlying message was this racism and violence. He doesn't have a dog whistle. He has human whistle. Everybody can hear what he's saying. And that's
right.
Makes it in some ways more scary, but in other ways it's like, well, you don't have to say to somebody, I think this is what Donald Trump meant. He's saying what he means. So now we just have to figure out how to stop that from filtering its way down.
Yeah, what Sarah Posner had an op-ed piece, and the last sentence was, he is about Trump. He is giving law enforcement explicit permission to treat policing like a war in which the president of the United States has defined enemies and allies.
Yeah, well, and so the history of our organization, Peace and Justice Works,
right.
Is that we started after Gulf War Part 1 in 1991. We actually were founded a year later in 92, and we were looking for a local issue to work on, and a series of incidents happened that led us to start a cop watch group because we recognize that the police are the local version of the military, that they're supposed to be run by a civilian chief, which is how our military is supposed to work. I'll talk about that again in a second.
Yeah.
And that they are enforcing state policy through the use of violence and taking people's lives, and nobody really does anything about it. So we've been working these 25 years. This was our 25th anniversary this year at Portland Cop Watch and Peace and Justice Works, and to try to reverse that both on an international level and a local level. So the thing about the civilian oversight of the military is that Donald Trump's pretty much said, okay, whatever my generals say, there you go, whatever you want. And that's, you know, just basically abdicating that responsibility to the military. And on that one hand, and then on the other hand, saying, I'm going to invade Venezuela because it's becoming too much of a dictatorship. Which is like, oh.
That's what crazy people do.
Right.
Well, it's you know, really, it creates a cognitive dissonance of, you know, these things, trying to believe both at the same time, it makes your head spin around, right?
Yeah.
So this is one of the things I love about Peace and Justice Works is making the connections between violence at home and abroad. And so as we look at the police in our neighborhoods and our communities and their tactics, their attitudes, we also look abroad at the wars that we are involved with. And at this point, there are so many, and they've gone on so long, and they're called various things. So if we could, Dan, you want to go ahead and talk a little bit about, you know, the whole we are the cop of the world, you know, that's and how that relates, really, with the militarization of our society.
Well, the history of the United States from its beginning has been to use violence to suppress people, usually people of color, and take their resources. And that has there's been very little exception to that in the way the U.S. has used its military between, you know, the early, you know, the late 1600s, I guess, but they weren't really militarized, but just coming in and wiping out the native populations with disease and whatever, no, and whatnot, and then turned into more war, overt warfare against the natives. That's been true all along. And the war in Iraq, you know, really been going on for 26 years. almost 27 years now, and we have troops on the ground in Iraq and Syria and Afghanistan and Somalia and Yemen. The only country that we've been actively bombing in the last 16 years since 9/11 that I don't think we have troops on the ground is Pakistan. But that's – oh, and in Libya. Did I say Libya? Yeah. So
no.
There's
– No, you missed them the first time.
Okay, I missed them the first time. So there's six countries that we have active war going on. And, of course, Trump is threatening North Korea. We actually were talking about a military attack in the Philippines a few weeks ago, which I didn't hear a lot of people talking about. And now he's threatening Venezuela, as I mentioned, and Iran. And we have countless – countless bases around the world. I mean, almost every country in the world that's not quote unquote our enemy, there's U.S. bases, but there's also bases in Syria at this point, which is bizarre because like the president of that country has no love for the United States. How is it the United States set up military bases in that country in a lawful way? So, you know, there's nobody enforcing international law.
I was going to say, I don't know if it'd be a lawful way in Syria. They can just set them up because there's not... I would think there's not
who's
much law.
Them?
Who's going to? It's pretty right. confusing, yeah.
Yeah, the 800-pound gorilla.
Yeah.
So, and two, that violence, and that's the whole reason that we see that connection, is that violence comes home. A couple of days after the Gulf War ended, and, you know, at the end of the Gulf War, the United States bombed the front and back ends of a convoy of Iraqi troops that were fleeing from Kuwait and bombed everything in between. And they plowed bodies underground with tanks with plows attached to the front. And you can all look this all up. I'm not making this up. But that kind of violence comes home. It was a couple of days later when Rodney King had the snot beat out of him by Los Angeles police. And somebody just happened to capture that with a video camera. And so that was 1991. About a year before that, the first Cop Watch group was born in Berkeley, California, where they took the Black Panthers' tactic of patrolling the streets to make sure their community was safe using guns. There were open carry laws, and they would walk around with guns to make sure the police wouldn't mess with people. And they grafted that with nonviolence and replaced the guns with camcorders. And so when we were starting out Portland Cop Watch, we're like, wow, that's a great idea. Mm-hmm. So we started out mostly focusing on civilian oversight of police, which, again, should be part of the military. We don't actually have civilian review boards for what the military does and all the war crimes that are going on in those countries we're talking about. We do have civilian review boards in many cities in the United States, and we had one here in Portland that didn't have a lot of teeth, and we've been trying to get that to be made more strong for our whole existence. But then we went down to Berkeley and got some training about how to actually do on-street cop watching, got ourselves some equipment. And even though our name is Portland Cop Watch, we only go out about four or five times a year to physically observe police on the street, but it's an important part of what we do. And now everybody can do it. I mean, that's the thing that's great too about technology, even though it cuts both ways. The government has more technology to spy on us and kill us with and track everything that we do when we go online. At the other hand, everybody has a camera in their hand now when they walk down the street. Well, not everybody, but most people who have cell phones.
Yeah.
And a lot of them are using those cameras and taping, observing police behavior and making it so that you can't ignore it anymore.
Mm-hmm. And I want to just make sure people know that you can call on in and join us. You can call in the studio at 503-231-8187 and join in the conversation this morning with your questions and comments. Also, you can follow along throughout the week. You can like Positively Revolting on Facebook. You can also follow in the Twitter sphere at Positive Revolt. You can also... I was going to give that phone number out again, 503. Join us right now, 503-231-8187. I'm Ani. I'm here with Lynn. And this morning, we are talking with Dan Handelman from Peace and Justice Works. Let's go ahead and take Jeremy's call. Good morning. You're on the air, Jeremy. Hello, Jeremy. Jeremy's not there. excuse me. Call on back, Jeremy. There are things going on that Peace and Justice Works is involved with. There's upcoming action towards the end of the month that mm-hmm. I want to make sure you're able to talk about. And again, that is the war on Syria.
Mm-hmm.
That September 23rd is the third year, right, of our actions there.
Yep.
And of course, we have seen human tragedy around immigration crises out of Syria, out of Yemen, out of so many places that are being ravaged, you know, by imperialist wars. Mm-hmm. So seems like a lot of folks that are really concerned about you know, immigration crises in Europe and everywhere and this and that might want to actually focus on stopping the wars that actually caused the crises.
I think that a lot of that is true. And I don't want to, you know, say any one issue elevates above another. And I think that the problem that we're dealing with now is there's so many things that the government is messing up, our government is messing up, that there's people are just running around trying to find some way to stabilize their lives. However, I do think it's true that, you know, wars cause devastation that push people around and create immigration crises, that wars also create people who want to hurt Americans. And that's the people who just on a basic level are afraid since 9/11 of terrorism, which is a very broad term and ill-defined, but should realize that we are not making more friends by dropping bombs on people and destroying their homes.
And in fact, we're destabilizing the whole situation.
The civilian death toll in Mosul, where they finally, you know, got the Islamic State out of there about a month and a half ago, the number of civilians that were killed was just astounding, and the United States was partially responsible for that, at least partially responsible for that. And, you know, nobody. So you're describing the upcoming events. We're co-sponsoring the Port and Peaceful Response Coalition's Friday rally, which has been going on every week since November of 2001. I just have to say that's an incredible feat. We did a calculation. It's been at least 825 weeks now, which is a lot of weeks to be out there, rain or shine. Ash. So on the 22nd, we're co-sponsoring the Friday rally at 5 o'clock at Pioneer Courthouse Square. It's a southwest corner, and it's Broadway and Yamhill. And I forget the exact title we gave it.
Stop the U.S. War on Syria.
That's pretty simple. Stop the U.S. War on
Straightforward.
Syria.
Straightforward.
And then 2 weeks after that is the 6th of October is the day before the 7th of October, which is the day that marks 16 years since the invasion of Afghanistan, if you can imagine that.
How time flies.
Yeah, people say it's the longest U.S. war, but I would argue that
Korea
never ended because there was an armistice and not a peace treaty. So certainly that is the longest U.S. war, right? But then the second longest would be the war in Iraq, which, as I said, it actually started in 1990 when we imposed sanctions on that country that killed half a million people, or, you know, million people, depending on whose numbers you look at. It's been 27 years. So there's ongoing wars. So I hope that people can turn out. It's at 5 o'clock. It's downtown on Fridays, and I think it's important for us to have a presence down there. And what I was going to say about that is that we used to after 9/11. The people would come up and say, "You should go to Afghanistan, you horrible people. Why are you, you know, disrespecting our troops? Blah, blah, blah. You're un-American." Okay, then after the Iraq war started revealing itself as being a huge mistake, they started saying, "Hey, thank you for being out here and honking, give us a thumbs up." And now, this year, the most frequent thing we had is, "Where are we at war?" Because people just don't think about it anymore.
There's a numbing process that goes on as we are in a war without a seeming exit strategy or endgame. We've heard that, well, we've stopped the war in Iraq and we've de-escalated the war. And yet it just sort of continues and seems to re-escalate without any kind of...
War without end.
Without any kind of headline. That is all going on, for sure. Let's go ahead and talk to one of the folks that's calling in. Jeremy is back, and let's get him on the air. Good morning, Jeremy.
Hi, Dan. I was actually shocked that the new police chief seems like she might not be absolutely as horrible. I was almost positive they were going to pick Marshman, and I thought it was just perfect that we would get some, you know, insider who abuses his 12-year-old stepson. Anyway, my general take on Wheeler is that he's awful on this subject, and all of his public statements since November with all the action in the streets has been sort of terrible. He seems to be giving the cops free hand to do anything, and I'm wondering what your sense of is this possibly a shift? that he's picked somebody that is less terrible, and can I expect less horrible behavior from the police on Sunday?
All right, thanks.
Well, I can't speak for what the police are going to do on Sunday. I think you're referring to the counter demonstration against the right wingers who are going to be protesting on Sunday. The police got a lot of flack, rightfully so, for launching the weapons we were talking about before on the June 4th protests and counter protests, or not on. It wasn't on the protest itself, right? Because the right wingers didn't.
No, they protected.
They didn't have to inhale any tear gas, but the rest of the.
No, they got police escorts in and out of the area.
The rest of the protesters did, and so I think that they decided to start going more hands off, which leaves people ending up in street brawls. And I am not going to argue for more police involvement. I just we're a group that promotes nonviolence, and I just hope that we can find ways to make that the prevailing attitude. But as far as the new chief, she's not in power yet. I mean, she hasn't even come to town. She's not expected to be here until October. We don't know that much about her. I mean, her biography says that she was a whistleblower down in Oakland, and she's made some comments in her initial news conference here that made people concerned about, I don't want to reform the police. I just want to help keep going along the path that we're already on. And she said, and apparently she's been working with the immigration folks down in the Bay Area in a way that's kind of questionable. So, I think we should judge people on their actions once they get in place. All that said, our attitude at CopWatch about who runs the police bureau was guided by a former Black Panther named Michael Zinzin, who said, when you got a rickety old bus and you change the driver, you still have a rickety old bus. So the problem is the institution of the police, and there's going to be very little she can do. I mean, there's some things she can do, but there's going to be very little she can do without cooperation of all the members of the bureau and kind of that institutional momentum to stop this kind of violence. And Ted Wheeler, as the civilian head, also has to set the tone for that. So we have a lot of issues. Plus, we have a national trend toward militarization. That's the topic of the show today, which is obviously we're part of this country right now. And we'll see what happens in terms of our ability to actually resist what's going on in the rest of the country. Portland's pretty good at that in some ways. In other ways, everything that's happening somewhere else happens here at some point. I have hope that we can turn things around, but we just can't rely on the people in power to make that happen. We have to take action to make that happen.
And just in case people hadn't heard, that there is, in fact, a rally and march against white nationalism. It is this Sunday in response to an announced gathering of the alt-right, which is, I'm now unclear as to whether that's taken place or not. But hey, there is a coalition that is actually sponsoring a rally and march in downtown Portland on Sunday, and that's Portland Stands United Against Hate is that coalition. KBOO is a proud co-sponsor of this event. And just to give people some information, that rally gathers on Sunday at 12:30 at Terry Schrunk Plaza. That's, Southwest 4th and Madison in downtown Portland, across from the Federal Building. And after the rally, there'll be a march to Salmon Street Fountain at Waterfront Park. And so you can get more information about that on the right side of the homepage at kboo.fm under community events. Since we are a co-sponsor, it's listed on our community calendar. There's so much to talk about. We have, we're looking at about 8:28 right now, so we have about 30 minutes left. I want to let folks know, coming up on KBOO, it's 9 o'clock, Beloved Community will happen with two musical guests, John Slaughter of Poetic Justice and Hawaiian guitarist, singer, and composer, and philosopher Makana. At 10 o'clock, it's Threshold Shift. a resident sound artist series. At 10:15, it's Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein. At 11 o'clock, The Digital Divide talks to William Richards, author of Sacred Knowledge, about the John Hopkins Psilocybin Research Project. And we just need you to know that KABU is, in fact, your independent source for news and entertainment, and we want you to become a member. We want your participation in this independent media resource. You can go to kboo.fm and click on Donate. If you have a phone app, you can just tap the Donate button right there. Simple and easy. However you can do it, jump on in. We need you. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. We are here this morning, Positively Revolting, and we are speaking with Dan Handelman from Peace and Justice Works and Cop Watch. 503-231-8187, the number to call. And Sam is on the line. Good morning, Sam.
Oh, good morning. We've seen a significant escalation in terms of the tactics and weapons used by Portland police just since the inauguration. And that's under Mayor Ted Wheeler. Mayor Wheeler is in charge of the police. The chief of police serves at the mayor's pleasure. And the city council also has a responsibility in terms of how the police conduct themselves. They generally tend to deny that responsibility and just say, oh, well, that's under, on the mayor's desk. But every commissioner, everybody on the city council basically has a generalized oversight on how the city's run. So if something major is wrong in one department, such as the Portland Police Bureau, it's up to every commissioner to speak to that. And we have had a significant escalation of violence. We've had pepper spray. We've had tear gas used, where that's unprecedented, to my understanding, in recent years in Portland.
Yeah.
We've had an escalation of flashbangs that was very minimal prior to this administration. The mass arrest that occurred on June, it was a detention.
Yeah.
But that, to me, seemed clearly unconstitutional, where several hundred people were kettled and were told they couldn't leave until they finally produced ID. That seemed very unconstitutional. I haven't heard anybody actually weigh in on the constitutionality of that. But my concern is this. Dan, are you familiar with commissioners that actually are pushing back and are actually weighing in on this escalation of violence? Are there commissioners that want to return Portland to a more reasonable level of enforcement and not this particularly aggressive posture that Ted Wheeler seems to be pushing right now?
There's a couple of things I would like to address first in what you're saying, Sam. Dan, CopWatch puts out the People's Police Report, and you have the current issue in your hands even as we speak. But this is CopWatch follows the actions of the police and looks at how they've been dealing with the community, and you've been doing so for a couple decades. Do you think that there's a sudden escalation in police violence since January?
No, the escalation started before that. I mean, certainly...
That's my perception.
There have been minor bouts with the police using such weapons here and there, but they started using them all in concert at the end of last year after the election. It was not solely after the inauguration in January. And that kind of came on the tail end of the battle that we... Cop Watch and others in the community were fighting about the police union contract. And I use the word union loosely here because obviously the Portland Police Association is not part of the AFL-CIO and doesn't stand in solidarity with other labor organizers. But the point is we were all trying to fight against that contract, which removed the horrendous 48-hour rule that allowed the police to wait for 2 days before they got interviewed after a deadly force incident. In return for $6 to $9 million a year for the police rank and file, because we knew that the only reason they would give that up is if they had something up their sleeve. And it turned out, of course, we were right. And we'll talk about that in a second. But the city council shut out the public after the first hearing. They would not let us testify, and they actually went up into a different room to take the final vote. And people stayed around City Hall that day. I went home because this hearing was over, and people were, you know, were still there to protest. And instead of just kind of saying, okay, well, whatever, we'll have, you know, this is what happens sometimes when people are upset with our policies, they ordered the police to push everybody out of City Hall, down a concrete stairway, pushed them out the door, physically pushed people down on the, you know, on the sidewalk. You can see video of this, and pepper sprayed people in the face. And that, to me, that's kind of like the beginning of this, the wave of police violence that we're in now. And not to say that it wasn't happening before that in other forms. I mean, the police have attacked May Day protesters several years. A couple of years ago, they were firing flashbangs as they retreated. And when we were out cop watching, we videotaped an officer falling off the back of a little vehicle that they stand on the side of, because they were in such a rush to get away from everybody. But, you know, there has been certainly, you know, militaristic attacks by the police, you know, for a long time, and, you know, including after the second Gulf War broke out, the Iraq War in 2003, when there was so much violence that the city ended up paying an $875,000 settlement to the people who got harmed and their lawyers.
Yeah. There's a long and ongoing struggle with police violence. And as tempting as it is to say, wow, everything got so much worse on January 20th, many things did get so much worse. But I want to be very clear that police violence has existed long before. As a regular participant in May Day rallies in the city, I have seen plenty of flashbangs and tear gas, or pepper spray. I'm not really sure. I don't read the side of the canisters when it starts going off. So, just to be clear on that, Sam, did you? I'm sorry.
He asked a question about city council as a whole taking responsibility. Okay. I mean, I could go on for half an hour about just this topic, but in short, I mentioned that we had a police review board here already in 1992 when we started as a group. That oversight body was called PIAC at the time, the Portland Internal Investigations Auditing Committee. And it was put into place by voter ballot by a 0.1% margin after the police union forced it on the ballot when the city council voted into place. And it was 13 citizen advisors who advised the city council about whether or not a person's complaint about the police should have been found in or out of policy. And that body forced all of city council to take votes from time to time, and accelerating after the incidents that led to our creation in 1982, to take a stance on individual cases. And several times the city council voted to sustain findings against police officers, and the police chief said, nope, thanks for your advice, I'm not going to do that, because mm-hmm. that's the way it was written, is that the police chief had the final say. So the Mayor Vera Katz in the year 2000, after one of the attacks on May Day, mm-hmm. a very serious attack on May Day, where mm-hmm. they were using beanbag shotguns, which we actually haven't seen being used in recent years, they turned it into what's now called the Independent Police Review. It is housed in the auditor's office. There's 11 community members who sit on a citizen review committee that can review these appeals. And this has only ever happened twice in the entire history of this body since 2001. If the Bureau disagrees with a finding proposed by the 11 civilians, that case goes to City Council. And in February of this year, Mayor Wheeler and all members of council had to vote on whether or not a guy with mental health issues who got tasered 6 times, whether the police were out of policy. Mayor Wheeler and Commissioner Saltzman both voted to say they felt that a reasonable person, and this is the standard they have to use because of the way the ordinance is written, a reasonable person could have found that the officer was within policy for using this taser 6 times. And 3 other commissioners said, there's not enough evidence. It could have been out of policy. We're not sure. So unlike in a court where it's like guilty or not guilty, in this system, there's a kind of a tie game like in soccer. Yeah. And so they said there was insufficient evidence, and that was the final finding. So it was 3-2 vote. So if you're asking about individual commissioners, Commissioner Fish, Commissioner Fritz, Commissioner Udaly all thought that it was at least possible that the use of this taser on this one man was not reasonable. There's not a lot of trail of evidence about their position on other police violence because not a lot of things get to the city council. For instance, IPR puts out an annual report every year. They haven't been before city council for the last 3 years. The one that from this year came out in May, the auditor who's in charge of it just put three of her bureau's audits on the city council agenda the other day. One was about trees, one was about risk management, which is, I guess, good, and one was about city finances. But there was the IPR's annual report was nowhere to be seen. So it's almost like she doesn't want to have these public discussions about what the police are doing, possibly because she's afraid of how many people will come forward and say, the police are hurting me, and when I file the complaint, nothing happened to the officer, because that doesn't make her look good.
Right. Well, there's so much to talk about, and time is running out, so let's go ahead and get Barth. Good morning, Barth. You're on the line.
Good morning. Hello, Dan. Thanks for your work for this long period of time and making a difference in the local area. The fact that the police are more militarized here and elsewhere is a given, but a lot of people don't really think or hear about it because the police are not discussed. The overreaction and escalation that they've done with the public in terms of pepper spray and frankly abuse of regular citizens doing their citizenly duty to, you know, talk to the government and to make their views known is really quite disturbing. And let's not forget that, you know, this is a pretty white city, and this is a you know, these are just regular folks of all races that are being abused here. That being said, I want to go back to an earlier point. The weapons that the police bought are the civilian equivalent, AR-15s, or the civilian equivalent of M-16s.
Oh, thank you.
And not a big deal, but
see, I told you, don't know anything.
A whole different movie.
okay, good. Thanks.
I don't know really what else I can wade in on here, but I'll let you guys comment and I'll hear it off the air. Thanks again. Good day.
Thanks, Bart.
Thanks very much.
Well, our initial discussion was about this reversal by the Trump administration of Obama's limited ban on some military equipment coming to local police. And I have a piece here that says that Jeff Sessions, our attorney general, said that the limits went too far and put superficial concerns above public safety. And he thinks that by allowing these weapons to come into local communities, they will not allow criminal activity and will eventually save taxpayer money because people will be, I guess, not behaving in a criminal way, so they don't have to put them in jail. I don't know what he means.
I know. Did he say how it would save taxpayer money? No, he just said it will save taxpayer money.
Well, he said there was a study that claimed heavily militarized police force would cut crime substantially, but there was another study that just came out from Stanford University that said that when law enforcement receives more military materials, it becomes more likely that you're going to jump into high-risk situations, and military isn't make every problem. I'm quoting from this from an article that's quoting the study. Even a car of teenagers driving away from a party looked like a nail that should be hit with an AR-15 hammer.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's really
the concern for me, is that the more approval, really, for escalating police response, the more violently police tend to respond. And that is, you know, it's one of those things that just sort of, you can see how one leads to the other. And it's really concerning when we do hear so often, well, I had to shoot them, they were trying to get away, when that was no part of our justice system that I learned in third grade civics class, right? Mm-hmm. Sure, we don't want folks, we don't want the, quote, bad guy to get away. But we also don't want the police to, say, have approval to commit extrajudicial executions, which is really what that is.
Right. Well, actually, Tennessee versus Garner established that you can't just shoot at somebody who's running away. They have to present a clear and present danger. So that's a federal Supreme Court ruling. But that said, it is those deadly force cases that we see here in Portland that disproportionately affect African Americans in a city that the caller mentioned is very white, that those shootings not resulting in any discipline makes all the other violence okay, mm-hmm. right? Because if I can shoot and kill somebody and get away with it, then if I pepper spray somebody in the face or shoot them with a less lethal weapon during a protest action, certainly that's going to happen to me then. And I think that's the problem.
Yep. The bases are loaded and we have about 15 minutes left. So let's talk to Deanna. Good morning, Deanna. You're on the line.
Good morning, everybody. Thank you for this conversation. So important. I've been following this ever since I moved to Portland 12 years ago, and when I wasn't outraged, I was confused. So I really need this talk. Here's
you.
My question. Given all the things that have just been said, I don't need to restate them. It's clear to me the police have way too much power, however you slice it, look at it, and everything. I would like to know if you can talk about where the vulnerable point is for a campaign to demilitarize the police and take away this obscene, unconstitutional, outrageous amount of power that they have. Is it the city council? Is it the mayor? Is it the Portland Police Union? Who is it?
Well,
thanks.
Thanks,
well,
Deanna.
Everything traces itself back to the Portland Police Association, really, because whenever we try to strengthen the police review system here, we always run up against, well, it's in the contract, we can't do it. And that's one of the reasons there was such outrage last fall when all they did was remove the 48-hour rule, because we said that contract also prohibits independent investigations into deadly force incidents and appeals to the Citizen Review Committee of deadly force incidents. And, there's certainly other things that are in there that are holding us back from having true accountability. So, yes, the Police Association contract is something, and Ted Wheeler ceded his responsibility for that contract to Charlie Hales. The contract didn't expire until June of this year, and it was negotiated in October of last year under the pretense that they needed more officers. Now, they have hired a lot of officers since then. Maybe the benefits that they offered have helped attract people here. I'm not going to argue that point. But doing it in haste without a public conversation doesn't outweigh than, quote unquote, alleged need for more. And, we can argue too that, crime has gone down substantially since the 1970s, and yet we're still talking about we need more officers for this and that and the other thing. Well, maybe we don't.
A fair point.
So, you asked the flashpoint. So that part of it is the police association, but the overall, when you look to a bigger picture about what that means, is the money, right? We always say follow the money. So we would have free school, free housing, free healthcare for everybody if we weren't spending $600 billion a year on the military in this country. But nobody talks about that. And Donald Trump came close when he said, transgender people are costing us too much money. That's a couple $100,000 a year. But I heard people on the radio saying, we have a $600 billion a year military budget. Well, we're finally having that discussion, but nobody's saying, that's kind of ridiculous. And we need that money here in our local communities. There's not a lot our city council can do about that. We passed Peace and Justice Works pushed a resolution through several years ago that said we should bring the troops home from Afghanistan and use the money for local needs. And that still stands on the books as a city policy. And we can remind them of that. I think that's one of the things we have to do is keep reminding them that we need to bring those war dollars home and spend it on human needs.
Absolutely.
Which gives people actual security. Instead of this, whatever, this fantasy.
that somebody walking down the street with a rifle in their hands is going to make us more secure,
Let's go ahead and get another caller on, 503-231-8187 is that number. And let's talk to Linda. Good morning, Linda. You're on the air.
For the great show, you guys. I wanted to let you know that in terms of the conversation where the gentleman mentioned that on the June 4th, the police circled people and looked at their IDs, et cetera, and that should be unconstitutional. An organization called Partnership for Civil Justice Fund fought a case of the Brooklyn Bridge where in Occupy, a lot of people were surrounded, were pushed into they were following police directions and were pushed into a location, then surrounded, then arrested.
Yeah.
And that case made it from the Second Circuit Court up to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court refused to see it and allowed it to stand with the Second Circuit Court ruling, which the Second Circuit Court basically said that, yes, you can be following the orders of the police and not being doing anything illegal, and they can kettle you. They can put you in a corner, wrap you all around, and arrest you. And they left it at that. So that's an ongoing battle, and the Supreme Court declined to overrule their ability to do that. So that put us in a lot weaker position nationally.
I should say,
though, Constitution.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And I actually, you know, for all the reading I do, I had not heard about that. But the ACLU of Oregon is, you know, they at least wrote a strong letter, and I think they're maybe planning to do something more strongly about the kettling that happened here. And there's people in my group that say we should say boxing in instead of kettling because it's a weird term.
You might want to put them in touch with this. I mean, it's easy to find on the web. It's the
I'm sure the ACLU knows about the case. I'm sure the ACLU knows about the case. I think that there may be certain nuances to Oregon law, and that they're going to be able to
hopefully use behalf.
Right. And particularly, there's a law that we are unfortunately very aware of at Portland Cop Watch. It's 181A.250 for those of you playing along at home. And it's a law that the ACLU helped put in place in the 80s that says that police can't collect or maintain information about people's social, political, or religious affiliations without a suspicion of criminal activity. So if all the people were doing was protesting and expressing their First Amendment rights, and there's no criminal activity, and, you know, I think the police will probably argue they were walking in the street without a permit, but, you know, is that illegal if it's exercising First Amendment rights, if there's not enough room on the sidewalk, where are they supposed to go? That might have been a violation of that law. Before we run out of time, though, I just want to briefly say one other thing, that where the city council has purview over the police here in Portland is the Department of Justice settlement agreement that came into effect in 2012. I can't believe that hasn't come up yet. But the police were found to have a pattern and practice of using excessive force, especially against people with mental health issues, which ignored the pattern and practice against people of color and demonstrators. But let's leave that aside for now. And the U.S. Department of Justice forced the police to rewrite a lot of their policies and rules and training to try to use more de-escalation. Unfortunately, this is the federal Justice Department, and they don't have the same interests in mind as we community activists do. So even though they want the police to de-escalate, they define and they allow the Portland police to define de-escalation as, oh, you should put away your taser and bring out your pepper spray because it's a lower level of force, and that's a de-escalation. It's like, no, that's not what we mean by de-escalation.
That's very different than what I would have in mind. Goodness. Well, we are almost out of time. Before we run out of time, we do have one caller on the line that I want to get to, but I also want to make sure that, Dan, for people that want to get involved, I mean, I've been really, I don't know, disheartened is not exactly the word, dismayed, despairing, I don't know, of the fact that the peace movement seem to have disappeared there for 8 or 9 years, and it does not like those wars stopped. As we mentioned, it seems like we're ever expansive. And I know that there is the weekly rally downtown, but perhaps people want to get involved in a peace movement in a way that perhaps they haven't been for a little while. How can people contact Peace and Justice Works?
Well, I'm glad you asked. Our office number is 503-236-3065. The Peace and Justice Works website is pjw.info. Somebody was cyber squatting the .org, so we have .info. pjw.info. And CopWatch is portlandcopwatch.org. And you can find information on those websites about things. The next meeting of the Iraq Affinity Group, which is our group that works on, it doesn't work on only Iraq, it works on other U.S. military misadventures, is on Monday, this coming Monday, September 11th of all things. We're having a meeting to talk about the U.S. wars that have been ongoing for years. And that's at 7 o'clock. And so you can get details by calling our office at 236-3065.
All right. And let's go ahead and talk to John. Good morning, John. You have just a couple moments. John may have given up. In which case?
Okay, well, just to extend that pitch for our organization a little bit, Portland Cop Watch has meetings once a month as well. We just had the September meeting, but we require people come to an orientation first because, you know, as I've thrown out all these things, IPR, CRC, City Council, all this stuff, it's just incredible. We find people come to our meetings, they get really confused very quickly, and then they don't come back. So we have a one-hour orientation that we ask people to go through before they come to a Cop Watch meeting, but if you call and that's what you're interested in, you know, just make sure to set up an orientation.
Very good. Yeah, there's a lot of alphabet soup out there, and systems are very complicated in a way that it seems to, I don't know, discourage public involvement.
Yeah, and two, if people want to learn more about that, we have a glossary on our website to help figure out what this.
Yeah, and it's really good. It's very clear. I like your website. It's very clear.
Thanks. And then we also have our new newsletter that you just mentioned. Issue number 72 of our newsletter comes out three times
paper.
A year. Do the math. Right. That's our fundraising tool and our outreach tool. So we still insist on doing this first and paper, and then 6 weeks later we post it on the website so that. People will want to subscribe to the People's Police Report. But we have if you haven't received one yet, we can send you a sample issue, and we hope that you'll subscribe in the future. So just get in touch with us about that.
All right. And again, we have just about 3 minutes left. So upcoming events beyond those meetings, people may be concerned about that, the endless wars that are going on. Again, there's the Stop the U.S. War on Syria, Dan.
Yes, that's on Friday the 22nd at 5 p.m. at Pioneer Courthouse Square. And that's part of a three-part series that we're doing that says End the U.S. Wars, I think.
There's the U.S. out of Iraq.
No, go up to the top. Yeah, we did a U.S. out of Iraq demonstration in early August because that would mark 3 years of the third Iraq war. There was the first Iraq war was 1991. The second one was 2003. And the third one started in 2014, the war against ISIS. It's called Opposing America's Ongoing Wars. And so we're doing the series of co-sponsoring three Friday rallies. We did the one on August 4th. Then we're doing this one on September 22. And then on Friday, October 6th, we're doing one about Afghanistan. 16
so many
freaking years. I know, right? So actually, Monday is 16 years since 9/11. And, you know.
How time
And that means 16 years since the Patriot Act and a rollback of civil liberties.
Right. And so people say that changed the world as though we needed to step up and create this war on terror. Actually, it changed the world in that our country became more militarized, more fascistic, and has more restrictions on our civil liberties than ever before.
And that's something that really has fallen out of public discourse. So I want to do a better part of my job in making sure that things like the Patriot Act and how things have changed in these last 16 years is not really forgotten. You know, it's like that we used to talk when Melody and I first started this show in the mid-90s. We would talk about the boiling frog syndrome, right? Mm-hmm. Where if you take a frog, who knows how this got come up with. I really hope no frogs were injured in figuring this out. But if you take a frog and you throw it into a boiling pot of water, it saves itself by jumping out. It's the shock of the heat and it notices.
Unless it then gets a scorpion on its back. And once it goes,
that's a different parable. But the corollary there is that if you put the pot of water on to boil with the frog in it, and the water raises its temperature gradually, the frog just sort of cooks to death. And that is, in fact, I think, what has been going on with the rollback of civil liberties and the fact that if you're younger than your mid-20s, you don't really remember a whole lot of how the world
that
was put
true.
Together before
I got to
that.
Go to the airplane without taking my shoes off.
Right? Go figure.
You're in Mexico. Oh, no, wait.
No, before 16 years ago. Well, I mean, really, the shoes only happened, 7 years ago. But again, it's the death of a thousand cuts as these rights are continuously whittled away. Dan, thank you so much for joining us. We are out of time. Again, how do people contact Peace and Justice Works?
PJW.info is the website, and 503-236-3065 is the phone number.
All right.
Thanks so much, Dan.
Thank you for joining us. Thank you for your work. And we will continue to be positively revolting. Keep listening to KABU all morning long at 9 o'clock. Beloved Community is coming up with your host, John Shuck, and his guests, John Slaughter of Poetic Justice and Hawaiian guitarist, singer, and composer and philosopher, Makana. All this and more coming your way on KABU, your very own community radio station.
What would you have instead?
This is it.
A time when every second, every day, when every action, every thought will tell the world how you cast your vote.
KABU Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Big Chill Benefit, Sunday, September 10th at the Bit House Saloon in Portland. The Big Chill Benefit is a fundraiser for Stephen Mitchell, aka DJ Chill, a person known for his support of local Portland artists. Funds will go towards DJ Chill's recovery after being injured in a major car accident earlier this year. Again, that's the Big Chill Benefit, Sunday, September 10th at the Bit House Saloon. 727 Southeast Grand Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kabu.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KABU Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KABU in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KABU Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland. The Personnel Committee will meet on the second Monday of each month at 6 p.m.
KBOO Portland.
Yes, this is KBOO Portland. It's 9 o'clock in the a.m. And it's time for Beloved Community, followed at 10 by Threshold Shift, Resident Sound Artist Series. Check out how you can be KABU's Artist in Residence for the 2018 year. That's just a short bit. It'll be followed at 10:15 with Flashpoints, which will in turn be followed